Day 23. It's day 23 in quarantine and I'm losing my mind.
Oh God, somebody come get Sammy.
Oh my God, I'm going nuts because I have nothing to do. You know, like I'm doing the best I can.
Yeah.
And making do the best I know how, but this is getting rough. You know, like I've got my hobbies. I make my TikToks. I'm making a couple of masks. You know, I go grocery shopping only when I need to, but it's like, oh my gosh, Tess.
Oh, certainly when we you know, joined our video call for this episode, it was like, oh gosh,
oh
another
my
person.
God, another human being.
Somebody other than Ian. Ah. Like I love him, but
somebody other than my
help,
cats.
And I'm so grateful for him. But yes,
right.
it's nice to see somebody other than one person.
Yes.
Or myself.
Or my reflection.
The dog.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
But it's good to hear from you guys too. I love hearing your stories. You guys
yes.
have been reaching out to us. And
we
thank you
that.
So much. Please continue. You know, all of our platforms, you know, Instagram, Facebook, our website, you know, just reach out. We've got our email, conspiriesandcryptids@gmail.com.
Yeah, we
and,
love hearing from you. It helps us
yeah.
to all stay connected because we are all in this together, just like mm-hmm. High School Musical.
Exactly. We are all in
this together.
Yeah.
But
oh my gosh.
One conspiracy theory that I want to touch on real quick and kind of debunk it because I've seen it floating around and it's driving.
Please do.
It's not a good one. It's been really frustrating. A lot of places like Walmart and other stores, they are roping off things that are considered non-essential, like clothing and like seeds for planting a garden. And I've seen something going around saying the government doesn't want you planting your own gardens. The reason that that places like Walmart and stuff are roping off and cordoning off things like seeds and garden supplies is they don't want people coming in and just taking their time wandering through Walmart. Basically, stores right now, especially big stores like Walmart, Target, they want you to kind of get in, get what you need, and get out to prevent the spread of this disease. You can buy things like seeds and all sorts of gardening supplies online. No problem. There's no restrictions. Big bad government isn't preventing you from starting your own garden. Stores are just preventing people from buying things that aren't immediately necessary, you know, like food, water, things like that, because the more people are lingering in the stores, the more this disease can spread. So please stop spreading this blatant fear. It's not real and there's no basis in reality.
Exactly. When people intend to, you know, we've been seeing it, and, you know, like we need everybody when they say to us, you know, only go out for, you know, your essential mm-hmm. needs, essential services and groceries and stuff like that. People are using that as an opportunity to get everybody out of the house. Everybody gets to go run
right.
their errands. And it's like, no, that means one person.
Yeah.
One person
Unless
is the
you,
ambassador for the house.
Right.
And they get to go out and enjoy life for a second. And then they get to come
yep.
back and,
now, the only
and
time,
hang out.
The
and,
only
and,
time you should be taking other people out is
exactly.
if it's absolutely necessary. Like
and
if
they
you're alone,
have an appointment too.
Yeah, or like if you're alone at home with the kids and you need to go pick up something from the grocery store and you have to take the kids. You can't just leave them at home, especially if they're under a certain age.
And obviously you they know. Can't, you know, then you can't leave them in the car. But then, you know, this is where some parenting and discipline
yeah,
comes
but this,
in.
This
and,
is where, yeah, just common yeah. sense comes in. So
says to, you know, non-parents or pet parents. But hey, we still discipline our children, our fur children.
Oh, speaking of disciplining children, Midnight has learned how to open the door to my studio.
Uh-oh.
Because it's one of those like folding,
uh-huh.
kind of like
oh,
collapsing
no.
doors. And she has learned if she pushes the middle of it, it opens the door and she gets in here and gets up on the desk. So I've had to figure out ways to like barricade the door to prevent her from getting in here because I don't need her messing around with all of my equipment. So talk
Kitty
about disciplining
beans.
Children.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, God. Yeah, really. Keep the cat out.
Right.
Oh, man. Oh, but my fur baby walked me back to my office this morning. Aww. It was very sweet.
What a sweetheart.
We went for a coffee run and breakfast. And when we came back to the office, she usually goes back to her bed, but she came back to her bed in the office. Aww. So it was nice.
I miss little Java.
Anyway,
what a sweetie.
I know. She misses you too. But I'm anyway, sure. Hey, we still run a Conspiracy of the Cryptids podcast.
We do.
Sorry, guys. I'm sure you guys are also.
Well, I don't feel too bad about going on little tangents because I had somebody reach out to me today and tell me that they really appreciate when we just kind of ramble a bit because especially in times like these, when they listen to us, it makes them feel like they've got other people in the house with them.
Oh, nice.
So we shouldn't feel too guilty about rambling a little bit.
Oh, ramble away. I got plenty of room for rambling in the script today. We're going to have some fun, guys.
Yeah,
I picked a fun
topic too. I figured we needed it. Like
good.
I had my parents told me that they really liked the Elvis one last week because it was just so lighthearted. And I was like, yeah, we kind of need all the lightheartedness we can get at this point.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
So you ready to shake that penny for our thoughts?
I think I am. Okay. I think so. You're picking this or is it?
Yeah, it's my pick this week.
It's your pick this week. Okay. Yep. Shaking the penny for our thoughts.
I'm going to go with heads.
Heads. Ooh. It's heads.
Okay.
Go for it.
All right. I get to go first this week. So back when we first started this podcast, which it's almost 3 years ago now. It'll be 3 years next month. Because we started, it was 2017. Yeah, May of 2017 we started this, wasn't it? Or was it 2018? God, I don't remember. I don't. Maybe it's 2 years.
It might be 2 years. I don't think so.
Maybe it's
Somebody
2 years.
Somebody tell us. Help.
Oh, my God. Time has no meaning anymore.
The days run together. It's not.
Days run together.
No, it's just day.
Like, the days are running together. My sleep schedule is just non-existent at this point. But anyway, whether it was two or three, I think it was 2 years ago. But back when we first started this podcast, I promised my friend Jen that I would talk about her favorite conspiracy theory of all time.
And Jen, it's your day, Jen.
It is. And I told Jen she needs to tune in.
I hope you're listening.
I've kept meaning to do it for like our swap-isodes, but I always forgot or I found something else that I really wanted to talk about. But seeing as this is our swap a season and I'm doing all conspiracies, I figured what better time to talk about the mysterious and shady business practices of mattress firm.
Yay! I wanted to do this one, but didn't know how to write it. I'm so glad
it took me days to actually like flesh this out enough to like get hopefully a half hour's worth of content. If I start rambling, that's probably why, as I'm trying to fill
just
space.
Just filling time.
So, little bit of history about what this is.
That's good, because I need a mattress. I need one so bad.
Dude, it's getting to be time for me to need one as well.
Oh, I've had the same mattress since I was 13.
Okay.
I moved and took it.
Okay, you're supposed to change them every 7 to 10 years.
I just turned 29, guys.
You're supposed to change them a lot more often than that. That's concerning, Tess.
I changed my sheets, okay? I changed my sheets.
Still, mattresses soak up a lot of, like...
Stop it. Don't
everything.
Go there with our audience.
It soaks up gross stuff.
Don't shame me. Shut up. I don't have any money. Do you have thousands of dollars for a new bed? It's also a double.
I have
a full-size
bed. Anyway. Okay, so
thanks.
I just
checked,
you're
so
by
generous.
The way. It's May 1st of 2018 was when we started. So it was 2 years ago next month.
Glad we clarified that.
Anyway. On January 21st of 2018, a Reddit user whose account has since been deleted made a post simply asking, "What conspiracy theory do you 100% buy into, and why?" The thread was flooded with many different theories, ranging from Bill and Hillary Clinton being in an open relationship and that Hillary knew full well about Monica Lewinsky, but they had to save face when he was found out, to Isaac Hayes being assassinated by the Church of Scientology due to his involvement with the show South Park. One of the top responses, however, was about mattress firm and their strange business practices. So Reddit user crazy_potatoes posted, and I quote, "Mattress firm is some sort of giant money laundering scheme. They are effing everywhere. I'm not using expletives because I don't like to do that. So I'll say effing. They are effing everywhere and always empty. I remember seeing four Mattress Firms all on each corner of an intersection once. There is no way there is such a demand for mattresses. And then he goes on to edit the post because a bunch of people replied and said, a few people seem confused. I'm talking about multiple of the same mattress store in close proximity to each other, not different mattress companies. Like there were four, like if there were four different companies all next to each other, I get that. But these are all the same company. And you can even
see, it's like Starbucks. I know they're like the Starbucks of comfort.
Right. And I will actually talk about Starbucks a little bit later in this, just to kind of give like number comparisons. But the thing is like mattresses aren't an everyday purchase. There really isn't a need for a Mattress Firm, one store to be on like four street corners near each other. And you can find a couple of them really close to each other, even in Sacramento.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like right across the street from each other. I think
that's where my last bed's from. It's from a mattress firm.
Now, once the conspiracy theory was brought to light and the coincidences of store placement were made obvious, everyone started to notice the same thing. Mattress Firm is everywhere. In fact, after taking over the Sleepy's mattress franchise in 2016, they had over 3,500 stores in the United States alone.
Wow.
Other notable mattress companies that are also owned by Mattress Firm include Mattress Pro, Sleep Train, Sleep Country USA, Mattress Barn, and Sleep America. So they own all of those franchises. And in some places, wow, they haven't actually changed the name of the store to Mattress Firm. So if you see any of those other ones like Mattress Pro or Sleep Train, they are technically owned by Mattress Firm.
Interesting.
Right.
So they Sleep Train was a Sacramento, like, oh, maybe they bought part of Sleep Train. I think the Sleep Train did get sold anyway.
So they own all of these different mattress companies. Like they really tried to corner the market on mattresses. One of the main things that raises a lot of eyebrows about this large number of storefronts is the fact that mattresses aren't the kind of purchase you buy frequently, like I said. And like I mentioned before, most places say that you should replace your mattress only every 7 to 10 years, so you're really not doing it that often. There just simply doesn't seem to be a demand for mattresses to constitute needing that many storefronts.
And Absolutely not.
And that's not even counting all the competitor mattress stores either. So,
and there's never anybody in them.
And I will get to that as well. So,
ha ha ha, now I get to do to you what you do to me all the time.
So to put it into perspective, and this is where Starbucks comes into play, as of this recording, there are around 16,000 mattress stores in America, and there are only around 15,149 Starbucks. So for those like me that can't math, that's 851 more mattress stores than Starbucks. And I don't see people buying two or three mattresses a day like I do with Starbucks.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't think about that.
There's almost 1,000 more mattress stores in America than Starbucks coffee. And that's saying something, because Starbucks is a major, massive franchise, and they also seem to be on every street corner. Now, granted, this isn't all just Mattress Firm stores, but just mattress stores in general.
In general,
16,000 of them in America as of this recording.
That's insane. I know, right? I'm sure they're being like spawned as we speak. They're like crawling out of the ooze. Good Lord. Right? Oh my gosh. That's crazy. Who needs that many mattresses?
Nobody. But I will get into
so many mattresses.
I will get into some of the statistics on it. It's actually really interesting. So how exactly could all this work together to add up to money laundering? There were many comments speculating that, but one that stood out was from user Gemini27, and they put this together. Multiple stores equals more places to shuffle money between and more sources for fake money to appear from. Also, the closer together means that land is cheap in that area, or they only need to bribe one council if they want to do anything dodgy, or they can share assets between sites, particularly if they don't do a lot of real business, which requires it. You know, so basically, mm-hmm. if they buy up a lot of real estate in one area, that's only one person that they have to pay off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it means that, you know, if the store across the street sold 2 mattresses this month and we didn't sell any, we can take one of their sales and say we sold it. So
interesting.
Yeah. The user goes on to say, plus they might be able to do things like get cheaper land or rent if they only have to maintain one of the sites in full working order. For example, if none of the plumbing has to work at one site, as long as the employees can technically access the other one close by.
Oh.
So they would have to pay less in utilities because the one across the street has the only working toilet, but it's only across the street. So the employees can just walk across the street to it.
So you're almost like more seeing not multiple stores. You're more seeing a warehouse in multiple rooms across.
Yeah, across multiple streets.
It's just kind of spread out.
It's almost like one store, one fully functioning store spread out over 3 different storefronts.
Interesting.
Right. And then they continue on to say, or only one of the sites is used for backroom business storage and the other site's backrooms are used for ... other things.
Oh, for whatever mattresses do in the dark.
So.
Oh, God.
I know.
No.
Another thing that people pointed out is how empty these storefronts typically are, which, like you mentioned earlier. Now, I don't mean, when I say that, I don't mean they lack merchandise on the sales floor. It's just that there's never anybody in there. There's usually only 1 or 2 salespeople, and they always seem to be very surprised whenever somebody actually comes into the store.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
think about the last time you went mattress shopping.
Uh-huh.
The
salespeople, several weeks ago, because I just need a bed.
The salespeople seemed very confused why there was a person in their store, because people don't come in often enough.
He wasn't confused. He was more, thank God, someone to talk to. He was bored,
they're starved for,
mm-hmm,
like we are now, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, so they're rocking this.
They're
quarantine.
Just quarantining.
They're fine. They got their mattresses.
So, this has been used to point out the infrequency with which customers actually buy mattresses and also adds to the validity of why this many storefronts, especially within close proximity to each other, is very unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing I do want to put forward is the insane markup there is in the mattress industry.
God, yeah. Oh, my God.
So after
I just need a bed, man.
Right. So after doing some research and digging, I learned that the markup on mattresses can exceed 40 to 50% of the production cost, and in some cases can even reach 100%.
Oh, my gosh.
So let's say a mattress costs $500 to make. In some cases, that mattress is being sold for $1,000,
mm-hmm,
and thanks, they're making 100% profit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's an insane profit margin. And in fact, the mattress industry is one of, if not the most profitable sections of retail in general. Even if a company or store doesn't sell mattresses daily, even selling a couple a month could more than make enough revenue to keep the business running. So if you do the math, let's say they sell 50 mattresses in a month, which I grant you is a high number, but you know, especially for what's considered a grudge purchase, because mattresses, I don't know if you're familiar with the term grudge purchases, but it's things that are like you need, but you don't like spending the money on.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's like, I know I need a new bed, but I hate having to spend $1,000 on it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like you desperately need it, but you put it off for as long as possible because it's so much money.
And why I still have mine.
Yeah. Yep. And it's like, it's not something you're showing off to people. It's not something that's on display. It's literally just something you sleep on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's considered a grudge purchase. It's things like toilet paper is also considered a grudge purchase.
Yeah.
Although it's not as expensive, at least not unless you're buying it from eBay right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So let's say a storefront sells 50 mattresses in 1 month. And let's say they sell them at $2,000 each. Okay, 50 mattresses a month at $2,000 each. They just made $1.2 million in a year.
Whoa! Whoa!
Yeah. So they don't have to sell a lot of product to be able to turn a huge profit.
No.
You know, so that, you know, that kind of explains how, or at least this markup is what can explain the fact that these storefronts are always empty with no customers in them, but yet somehow they're able to continue functioning. So.
Mm-hmm. I see. And yeah. Then plus they're one store technically spread out. Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. They're sneaky. They are sneaky mattress salesmen.
Yes.
My goodness.
Now, it gets worse. This conspiracy theory built up even more traction in 2016 when the company was acquired by South African retailer Steinhoff Holdings for $3.8 billion, which was more than double the market price for the company.
Whoa.
So obviously that raised a lot of eyebrows at the time. Like,
yeah.
Why does some overseas retailer want to spend twice the company's worth to purchase a company that's in an industry that has, especially in recent years, been increasingly downsized due to online competitors like Casper and the Purple Mattress?
There's your money laundering. Although some mattress firms do sell Purple.
Yes.
They're
now
a vendor
but
of
like,
Purple.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now, that's now.
Yeah.
Like back in the day in like 2016. Casper and Purple Mattress were startups, and they were the biggest competitors for things like Mattress Firm and things like mm-hmm. that. You know, so it's like it looked very fishy for this overseas South African company to be
yeah.
willing to spend twice the worth to acquire this company.
Mm-hmm.
Things continued to get worse when in 2017, the very next year, Steinhoff was postponed publishing their year-end accounts due to accounting irregularities that did in fact appear to be fraud and money laundering.
Ooh, see, there it is. There it is.
In fact, two of their higher-ups were also under investigation at the time for getting kickbacks for signing up locations that were in more expensive than necessary areas such as Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, you know, like two of their higher ups were working with like real estate agents to buy storefront property for multiple mattress firms in like Manhattan,
mm-hmm.
which is some of the most expensive real estate in
yeah,
the country, in
exactly.
the world even.
Yeah.
And they were getting profit from that, like under the table. So
mm-hmm.
they were under investigation for that. So there's been a lot of shady stuff going on. Then in October of 2018, the company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Mm.
Now, as with math, I'm unfamiliar with law, and I don't know what that means, so I had to look it up. So I'll break it down for all of you with the help of Wikipedia. So when a business is unable – I'm just going to quote this verbatim because I would not be able to even paraphrase this, so because I don't understand it enough. So when a business is unable to service its debts or pay its creditors, the business or its creditors can file with a federal bankruptcy court for protection under either Chapter 7 or Chapter 11. Those are the two bankruptcy chapters.
Mm-hmm.
In Chapter 7, the business ceases operations, a trustee sells all of the assets, and then distributes the proceeds to its creditors. And any residual amount is returned to the owners of the company. This is what Toys R Us did a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they liquidated all of their assets to pay off their debts.
Yep.
And that's it. You know, and then the company's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now they might take some of the money that's left over and use it as seed money to try to start a new business.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, Chapter 7 usually means the business is done.
Although Toys R Us still exists online.
Yes, they were able to keep enough of the money
uh-huh.
to keep an online presence,
Got
though
it
was much
Got
smaller
it.
Than initial. So,
mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's that they use whatever they had left as seed money.
Yeah, but the storefronts don't exist
the
anymore.
The storefronts
yeah,
were
right.
gone.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now in Chapter 11, in most instances, the debtor remains in control of its business operations as a debtor in possession and is subject to the oversight and jurisdiction of the court. So they're still running their business, but the court is watching them like a hawk.
Mm-hmm.
A Chapter 11 bankruptcy will result in one of three outcomes for the debtor: reorganization, conversion to Chapter 7 bankruptcy, or dismissal. So dismissal means they kind of cancel out their debts and they say, We're going to forget your debts.
Mm-hmm.
Conversion to Chapter 7 means that they end up having to liquidate. But the reorganization is what I'll get into now. So in order for a Chapter 11 debtor to reorganize, the debtor must file and then the court must confirm a plan of reorganization. In effect, the plan is a compromise between the major stakeholders in the case, including the debtor and its creditors. Most Chapter 11 cases aim to confirm a plan, but that may not always be possible. So basically, it's kind of a how are we going to move forward plan. And they proposition their plan on what we're going to do moving forward to fix our debt. And then the court says, okay, we'll approve that. Mm-hmm. But if the court doesn't approve it, then they have to reappeal and stuff like that, or they might get one of the other two outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what Steinhoff and ultimately Mattress Firm did. And they emerged from Chapter 11 bankruptcy a month later in November of 2018 with the plan to close 200 of their most unprofitable stores with the potential to close 500 more if necessary. So I think they did actually end up closing 700 total stores.
Wow.
Because they, as of like 2016, Mattress Firm had 3,500 stores, and I think now they're down to 2,800. Which is still
wow,
a lot.
Yeah, still that is a lot.
So they did close a lot, mm-hmm. and I guess they paid off their debts, and it worked out. So is Mattress Firm a money laundering front? Well, according to a company spokesperson, they said, "I can tell you with certainty that Mattress Firm is not a money laundering front. We are, however, obsessed with finding customers the best bed at the best value." Regardless, though, some shady business practices did happen at some point and probably are still happening. And a lot, and some of it does look like money laundering, potentially. But it's clear that a lot of debt that the company did have was seemingly hidden under the mattress.
Ah! You Peapod. You sneaky little sheet.
I had to. So that's mattress. That's the Mattress Firm conspiracy theory. It's really interesting that people just brought it up on Reddit and then everything kind of came to light afterwards. And what's even weirder is the person who made that initial comment, his account was deleted not long afterwards. And that kind of added fuel to the fire. Like, what happened to this guy?
Where'd he go?
Right.
Where did he go?
But yeah, so really interesting. I was actually really just fascinated learning that much about the mattress industry, because I'm actually getting to the point where I need to buy a new mattress as well.
You know, because let me know what you get.
I've had mine for 7 years now, so mm-hmm. I'm right in that time frame. But I've also been considering getting a bigger bed in general,
mm-hmm,
and moving my current bed to my guest room.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because I've got a full size right now and I'm thinking of upgrading to a queen.
Mm-hmm.
So this would go in the guest room. And yeah, I've been looking at mattresses, and you know, it's like, I don't want to spend $2,000, $3,000 on a mattress. I really don't. Mm-hmm. Like I personally mm-hmm. don't want to spend $1,000 on a mattress.
No, you know, you really shouldn't spend more than that. Like mattresses aren't like, I mean, if you're getting up into the like several thousands, you're being ridiculous.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I've had a couple of friends recommend, hey, you should look at getting a purple mattress, but that's a $3,000 mattress. For a queen size bed.
No, it's not.
Well, maybe that's the king size.
No, it's not. The king is like $1,400, $1,300, something like that. Yeah.
I don't know. Either way.
Anyway.
It was
expensive. I've looked at those myself. Yeah.
It was expensive.
Yeah.
Maybe I was looking at the one
that
was like.
Way richer than my blood. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to spend more than $800 on a mattress.
No,
if I'm being
exactly.
completely honest.
Exactly. So, well, interesting. That's very interesting.
Right.
And especially because right now I obviously have been shopping for a mattress. So,
that's what brought this into my mind. So.
And that's the thing too, because like, you're not just buying the mattress, you need to buy the bed to mm-hmm. go with it too. Otherwise you're sleeping on the floor and stuff. And I need a new, like,
I need a new bed frame.
I don't have a king bed frame.
Exactly.
I need a whole new bed frame. So, it's been quite a process, but we are not asking for mattresses. We are not asking for money for mattresses.
No.
Don't go there. We are just talking.
No, though, if the purple mattress does want to sponsor us and give us like
that
a discount code, that would be awesome.
Yes, that would be ideal.
So if in the future, if you're listening to this, like not on April 15th, 2020, and all of a sudden you're starting to hear like commercials in our podcast for the purple mattress. This is why.
There you go. This traces it back to this, you know.
All right. Oh, you want to take our break?
Let's go take a break. Okay. Go take a nap on our terrible mattresses and then we'll be back and crankier than ever.
Okay. We are back.
We are back.
We took a nice long nap on on our purple mattresses that we got 15% off for.
Oh, shut up. Don't insult me.
I'm lying. It's okay.
Oh, man. Okay. So, but anyway, quarantine. We are still in quarantine.
Yes.
And keeping up with the theme of last week's episode where I was talking about kind of wanderlust and places I've been and and revisiting places that, were important to me. And I got onto the topic of summers in Kansas City and Lee's Summit that I used to spend when I was a kid in the Midwest. And I'm born and raised in California here. And my grandmother lived in kind of the Kansas City area of Missouri. And it was like those were always really fun, and you know, to get to spend time in the lake and, and get to, you know, be out in the open and just to get to really appreciate the time that I got to spend there, right? And but it got me thinking, like, let's talk about some what kind of cryptids are from Missouri. Let's see what's going on there. So there's a this isn't from the Kansas City Lee's Summit area. It's actually from the kind of north eastern portion of the area. We're going to talk about Momo the Monster.
I don't know this. This sounds interesting.
Yeah, and we're actually not talking about that meme from a couple years ago. In fact, I surprisingly, that wasn't the first thing that popped up that when I searched for this information. Mm-hmm. However, I was too scared to do any image searching for the episode, so there are not going to be any pictures.
Right.
Because that, remember that Momo thing? That,
I do, yes.
No, no.
I was going to ask if this was related to that.
No, it is not. Okay. No. And like I said, I did not look for any pictures of this because I didn't want to Google that. No.
Yeah.
It's no. Because I know it's a sculpture. I know it's like somebody's it was just
a creepy sculpture, but you know.
It's burned in my skull and I don't want it to be burned back in there. It's been kind of fading. That etching has been fading. So anyway. Yep. The name is short for the Missouri Monster, which sounds cute, but you're going to question that sentiment by the end of this. It's apparently this thing is freaky, although it's funny. Most of the stories about this that I read were like, you need to fear this thing, and encounters with this thing ended in, you know, terrible things and awful things happened. Mm-hmm. But like none of the reported stories actually end with anything terrible happening, except for maybe the first one. Mm-hmm. So kind of strange. But anyway, there's a reportedly large, basically the description of this thing. He's a reportedly large, at least 7 feet tall, hairy, black, man-like creature that reeks to high heaven. That's pretty much all you need to know about him. He's also got a big old pumpkin head. Mm-hmm. So and apparently you can't see his face because of this mop of hair that's all over him.
Yes.
So he was the first reported sighting comes from July 11th, 1972. Some articles say it was 1971, but doesn't really matter. It happened near Louisiana, Missouri, or Missouri. Mm-hmm. It is an actual city,
right.
Louisiana, Missouri. Like I said, it's in like kind of the northeastern corner of the state, kind of getting toward like Illinois. Two kids are outside playing with their dog, their 8-year-old Terry Harrison and his 5-year-old brother Wiley. They're, you know, doing what Midwestern kids do in the 70s. Then they've got their 15-year-old sister Doris. She's inside doing whatever the, you know, teenagers were doing in the 1970s in rural Missouri. Mm-hmm. She hears the boys screaming outside and she runs to the bathroom. She's like, oh my gosh, gotta run to the bathroom window. She must have been somewhere nearby. And she sees a shape outside kind of near the trees and it's kind of standing near the boys. Yep. And it's about 6 or 7 feet tall, she says, and it's completely covered in black hair. And she said, in her words, it stood like a man but didn't look like one. And she immediately started crying and called for her mom. She's like, Mom, oh my God, this thing is like, no, you know, what is it, right? But mom wasn't home at the time. Obviously, she was babysitting the boys. So both Doris and Terry, though, got a really good look at this thing and said that you couldn't really see the beast's face because of the mop of hair all over its body. It also didn't really seem to have a neck, and it was flecked with blood from the dead dog that it was carrying under its arm.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Sorry.
Poor puppy.
But But the two boys, remember, they were outside playing with their dog. That dog wasn't their dog, but their dog apparently started getting violently ill after the encounter. Like, his eyes turned red. He wouldn't stop throwing up, and eventually he recovered. So, like I said, like, kind of a, like, bad thing that happened, but not, you know, like, the doggy is okay eventually. Right. I mean, not now, it's 2020, but but they said that the monster, though, reeked, like, it just reeked to high heaven, and right. that they blamed the smell on the dog's illness.
Okay.
Still gross, though.
Yes.
So then Dad, Mr. Edgar Harrison, he comes home from work. He works at the local waterworks, and he's also the deacon for the local Pentecostal church.
Okay.
He checks out where the beast was allegedly standing. The kids come home. You know, he comes home. Kids are like, oh, my God, Dad, this thing, it was standing over there. Go check it out, please.
Okay, uh-huh.
He goes over, he checks it out, and he's standing there. He doesn't find the monster, but he finds the brush broken and beaten down where something big was definitely standing.
So he was like, okay,
I don't believe you, but I'm paying attention.
Right. Okay.
So that same afternoon, a woman a few blocks away reported animal sounds outside and then spoke to another neighbor, a farmer whose dog had disappeared.
God, another dog.
No, same dog. Remember?
Oh, right.
The
same
report
dog.
Of the beast that, you know, with the dead dog under its arm. She put two and two together and she was like faster than Sammy did. And
I'm kind of slow. It's okay.
But this was kind of odd, too. Apparently, Mr. Harrison has like a sense of humor. It seems he was conducting a regular prayer meeting at his home and he started hearing this loud clanging outside. There's like this loud metallic banging noise coming from up the hill that's kind of near the back of his property.
Okay.
And there's a big water reservoir up there. Okay. And it's kind of at the top of this hill. Water flows down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, The banging gets louder and louder and louder and louder. Then all of a sudden, these clangs come with this animalistic growl at the end. And finally, he's like, okay, fine. You guys wait here. I'm gonna go check it out. And he walks out. And he drives a little down the street. And he's met with a group of about 40 armed people who are all heading for the hill to go find out what was making a racket at the water reservoir, because they've been hearing it all over town. It's like near his property, but everybody else is hearing it. They're like, oh, my God.
It was loud enough that everybody could hear it.
So loud. So they're all going to go find it out.
All right.
So rather than join the fervor, though, Mr. Harrison reportedly shouted, here it comes. And the entire crowd turned tail and ran screaming in the other direction. I mean, that's one way to break up a crowd. I mean,
I guess,
you know, there were apparently some reported strange cries and screams throughout the night, but their officers arrived on scene to investigate. They found nothing out of the ordinary when they got there. So who knows if that was just, you know, teenagers messing with people or or what happened. But later that evening, though, Mr. Harrison and a few friends went to investigate the hill and the reservoir and found an old building there, which reeked like a, quote, moldy horse or strong garbage smell. In the days that followed, people reported the smell where bizarre sounds were heard.
I've never smelt a moldy horse before, but I can kind of picture the smell.
Like mildewy alfalfa.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, okay, I've been around horses before, you know, especially growing up in the Midwest. I've definitely been around horses and ridden horses. So I've smelled a horse when it's like sweating. And I'm just imagining that plus like a mildew smell mixed in with it.
Pretty much.
And that's a kind of gross combination.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Speaking of that, one time, this happened when I was a teenager. My mom, she really wanted to lease a horse from somebody, but didn't want to own one herself. Just wanted to ride. Like, I just want to ride somewhere, right?
Right.
Without having to own or having a guide or anything like that, because we know how to ride, we just don't want to own, right?
Right.
So, she found this lady who was offering to, you know, if you come muck stalls, I'll let you ride one of the horses and just like lease it from me just in exchange for muck and stalls. Now, that sounds like a pretty good deal. And she goes, okay, I want to see, you know, how you guys do. It's just two of you. So why don't you guys do these three stalls in this afternoon and then I'll put you on a horse and we'll see how it goes. It was like over 100 degrees that day.
Oh my
mom
God.
And I worked all day long. That was, and these stalls were awful, like, oh, one God. Horse. I don't even want to go into detail of. Oh my God.
That was bad, just, huh?
It was bad. It was female. I'll just go there. And okay. So all day long, I'm so hot. I'm so tired. She, the end of the night, end of the day, she goes, okay, go ahead and hop on that horse and show me you can ride. I have ridden since I was a kid.
Right.
I have ridden since I was a kid, and this horse would not budge.
Oh, no.
And she told me I couldn't ride a horse. And I'm so tired and so frustrated and so angry. And this horse won't move. And oh, my God, it was just terrible. So, yeah, that smell. So you think about, like, just horrible horse smell. That's yes. What that day brings to mind.
Yep, I feel that. Okay.
Tangent over. Hello. Let's come back to what we were talking about. And I people whose souls reek anyway.
I love that. That was a great story.
Over the next week or so, though, there were tons of sightings and near encounters with the beast, but no photos or really detailed reports.
Okay.
On July 19th, Chief Shelby Ward led a 20-man search party to track down the monster.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Ward was reportedly afraid that nervous residents might start shooting and hit a local by mistake, which is a very real fear, mind you.
Right.
But if not more so than Momo itself. I mean, the...
Yeah...
People tend to shoot things when...
I mean, especially as far as we've covered, it's shoot first and ask questions later, especially if the person who found it was white.
Exactly. Like, they tend to... It's like, that should be a skit. It's like, you don't even realize you're armed. You just shot something, and it's like, where did this gun come from?
Where did this gun come from?
It's like... Anyway, that posse included Edgar Harrison and State Conservation Officer Gus Artis. They covered the hill and the surrounding areas with two-way radios, but ultimately they came up empty looking for this thing. Mm-hmm. However, some residents reported sightings at the time, so they may just have had some god-awful timing.
Okay.
Because people were like, well, of course it wasn't on the hill. It was in my backyard. It was in my root cellar. It was in, you know, my silo.
Right.
They went out again the next day and found trampled brush, signs of digging, and some really, really big tracks.
Mm-hmm.
They also found some handprints that would take one big boyo to make them. They were like, this would take some immense pressure to make these handprints in the dirt.
Okay.
They also reportedly smelled this thing everywhere, but never actually spotted it. And yeah, I kind of have a theory about that. But about a day later, a resident along the Mississippi River, Mr. Ellis Miner, was out on his porch late at night with his bird dog, mm-hmm. and the dog started to growl. And he switched on a big old floodlight that he had for hunting on the property, and he spots this thing 20 feet away from him.
Oh, God. Like, that's way too close.
Boom. Right there. Just pumpkin face, no eyes, just like hair everywhere, just in your face. 20 feet away from you. As soon as the beam flicked on, though, it just whirled around and took off into the brush. He didn't report the sighting to the police, but he did call Gus Artis, that conservation officer that was mm-hmm. part of that search party.
Okay.
At this point, Harrison's family just refused to go home. They were like, nah, not gonna, we're gonna take the dog, we're gonna go find a hotel or a family. Actually, what they did was there was a family restaurant that they owned. Somehow, I was like, Dad's part of, he works at the waterworks. He is
owns
the local Pentecostal preacher, and he's also somehow the family owns a restaurant, but the family went there to go hide out over there.
They were very well-rounded.
My goodness, what members of the town, I say. Although it is the 70s of rural Missouri,
Pillars of the community.
I'm sure somebody was also the pharmacist and the barber, too.
Probably.
but he basically turned his home into, like, the hunting, centerpiece. I mean, yeah, exactly. It was just for hunting this thing. He quit his job at the waterworks company and hunted the beast full time. With some friends, he hosted a three-week slumber party near the hill that reportedly housed the beast.
Mm-hmm.
They never actually found it in 3 weeks, but they did get close. When they got close, they smelled that smelly smell.
that smelly that smell that smells smelly.
Smelly, exactly.
Two SpongeBob references in one show. What are we, millennials? Hmm.
I dare say. Can you hear tell we've been indoors a while?
Indoors.
Anyway, the last alleged sighting came the last week of July into the early days of August. In the middle of the night, Mr. and Mrs. Bill Siddarth heard a loud clatter outside of a high-pitched howling. Mm-hmm. So they rose from the bed to see what was the matter. Like somebody stubbed their toe outside. It was like, holy, like, just noise outside. So Siddarth investigated and found a series of tracks outside and called his hunting buddy to investigate. Now, I would again mm-hmm. make fun of the hunting buddy and choosing to call him here, but here's where the story gets a little strange.
Okay.
If it isn't already enough for you guys.
It kind of is, but yes.
It's just, it's an amalgamation of weird.
We have so many of those. I mean, exactly. A lot of cryptids just are.
Should be our tagline. Amalgamations
of weird.
Yeah. The tracks were 20 feet from anything else, though. They were just out of nowhere. So it was like they started and stopped out of nowhere. And it was like it flew in, walked around, and flew out. But this thing is never reported to have had any wings.
Okay.
So where did where did it come from?
It has wings.
Now it has wings.
Or can teleport.
Exactly. But that was the last time it was seen, and it disappeared when winter came. So that's pretty much the last time it was ever seen, and it was never talked about. It wasn't really talked about again in the area, although it is kind of considered one of the state monsters.
Okay.
Obviously, it's Momo the monster, the Missouri monster. Amazingly, there are no reported recent sightings because nobody, you know, aside from the urban legend, nobody really talks about it much anymore.
Hmm.
Some theories say the monster could have been a rogue Native American individual who just never assimilated after, I mean, it was the 70s, so they'd been, you know,
that's pretty far-fetched. That's saying that for sheltered. hundreds of years, these Native Americans dwindled down to
150
one.
Or so, yeah.
Yeah, this Native American tribe dwindled down to one person who just never assimilated. It's like,
the hills of Appalachia, you never know. Although this is kind of far from Appalachia.
Yeah.
But it could also you know what I thought about the okay, so it said that every time they got close to something
mm-hmm.
that they would start smelling the smell.
Right.
What if somebody just had nervous farts?
Oh God. Maybe.
And they were like, they didn't know how to explain themselves, and they were just part of the search party, and they're like, we're getting close to something! And
I smell sulfur. It must be the monster.
So, yeah, I mean, anything is possible. I mean,
I guess.
But news of the monster, like I said, pretty much stopped when winter came, so he pretty much disappeared. That's pretty much all I've got on the Momo the monster.
So Momo,
and what do you think it is? I want to know what your opinion is.
I think it's a farty phantom.
A farty phantom. I like it. I like it. I think so, too. They're just very gassy. They're just so looking gassy. For some Beano.
Gas X or Beano.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, that's weird. To me, it's probably another owl.
Yeah, probably. You know, or, gosh, I don't know. Like,
I mean, for it to leave heavy footprints like that, it was probably just like a bigger animal, cow or something, you know.
Exactly.
I don't know. It was probably some regular farm animal. Or, you know, maybe it was just some weird monster. We really, I guess, don't know. But I don't think it was.
They apparently do have a plaster foot cast of one of the footprints from that last sighting. I wasn't able to find a picture of it. Like I said, I was too afraid to Google those for
just
because
you didn't want to see the Momo statue.
Mm-mm. Not having it, guys. I just won't go there for you.
That was a conspiracy theory that went around for a while.
Remember,
do you guys remember the Momo conspiracy last year? Last year.
Mm.
2 years ago.
I think it was last
year.
Mm-hmm. And the whole YouTube thing on the YouTubes.
That was something. I don't know. I think this Momo creature is just probably just some misidentified normal animal. Maybe a monster. Definitely not a lone Native American.
No, definitely not. No.
I will write that one off.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So, yeah, that's what I've got.
I like it. Yeah, I'd never heard of that one before. And I'm always intrigued when there's a cryptid that I haven't heard about because I just love them so much. And Facebook's algorithm has obviously learned that Sammy likes cryptids because I've gotten quite a few ads for this online course into cryptozoology. And I'm really tempted to, like, buy it and take it. Honestly, I might buy it and take it. And then I can come back, like, next season.
So super educated.
I can come back next season when I'm back in charge of cryptids and, you know, have, like, a course under my belt in cryptozoology.
Yeah, really? Then you make me look bad.
No, I don't think so. It'd probably just make me look worse. It's like, everything I've said was stupid. But,
oh, man. All right. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, I think so. So thank you, everyone, once again for listening. We appreciate you guys, and we appreciate that you enjoy us so much. You know, like I said, I've had quite a few people reach out and just, you know, thank us that we're continuing to do this in this, you know, quarantine, that it helps get people through the day. So, you know, we're thankful that you're still listening to us, and we're happy that we can help make your quarantine and your days, weeks, months, whatever, go smoother.
You know? I'm really glad that we still have so many of you are so such loyal listeners and stuff, especially because I've heard that a lot of people aren't listening to podcasts so much anymore because they're not commuting, which makes sense. And I'm glad that we can come be noise in your house. So, you know, I'll come be noise in your house whenever you want.
I'm so thankful that a lot of you are still here listening to us. That means a lot. I do want to give a shout out to the No Sleep podcast. I have recently been brought back on full time. I can actually announce that now. Cause before it was just like a guest spot, but I am actually back on that podcast, like as a full time, well, not full time, but you know, as a permanent narrator on there.
Awesome.
So,
we're so proud of Sammy. Yay. Yeah, round of applause.
The episode that came out yesterday, which was the 12th of April, I am actually featured on two different stories. So you guys should go check them out if you don't already. And give them a follow because they have a lot of really cool, like, horror fiction stories. So if that's not your thing, I totally get it. You know, horror fiction is definitely not everybody's shtick, but, if it's something you're interested in, or if it is your shtick, give them a listen because you'll hear a familiar voice on there.
You'll listen to Sammy's voice tell you really cool stories. Make you pee your pants.
But
all right. We've had too much interaction. I feel like our meter is full.
Yeah. It's time for me to go back and veg out on the couch in front of the TV. So thank you guys again for listening. You can find us on all of our social media at Cryptopod. Check out our Patreon. You know, we once again just want to thank our patrons so much. You guys are extremely important to us, and we really can't thank you enough. So, all right. Well, we will talk to you guys again on May 1st, which is our anniversary.
Yay!
That'll be the start of our third year.
Yay!
So, but it is our 2-year anniversary next episode. So,
huzzah!
Yeah. So, thank you guys for listening. We will be back May 1st. And don't forget,
Big Brother is watching. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at Cryptopod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.